chapter 5, and I want to begin with verse 22. I read this week, by the way, where Carl Sandburg was asked by a young actor, and said, "I want you to watch my acting and criticize it. I value your opinion." And Sandburg went to watch him act, and he went to sleep while the young fellow was acting. And so the young fellow later on rebuked him and said, "You shouldn't have gone to sleep. You know that I value your opinion." And Sandburg says, "Young man, sleeping is an opinion. So if I see you falling asleep, I know your opinion. So you stay awake, all right?" "Behold, there cometh one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name. And when he saw him, he fell at his feet and besought him greatly, saying, My little daughter lieth at the point of death. I pray thee, come and lay thy hands on her, that she may be healed and shall live. And Jesus went with him, and much people followed him and thronged him. And a certain woman, which had an issue of blood 12 years, and had suffered many things and many physicians, and had spent all that she had, and was nothing bettered, but rather grew worse. When she had heard of Jesus, came in the press behind and touched his garment. For she said, If I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole. And straightway the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of that plague. And Jesus immediately, knowing in himself that virtue had gone out of him, turned about in the press and said, Who touched my clothes? His disciples said unto him, Thou seest the multitude thronging thee, and you say, Who touched me? And he looked around about to see that had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what was done in her, came and fell down before him and told him all the truth. And he said unto her, Daughter, thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace and be whole of thy plague. And while he yet spake, there came from the ruler of the synagogue's house certain which said, Your daughter's dead. Why trouble the master any more? As soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he said unto the ruler of the synagogue, Be not afraid, only believe. And he suffered no man to follow him, save Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. And when he cometh to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and seeing the tumult, and them that wept and wailed greatly, and when he was come in, he said, Why make ye this ado and weep? The damsel is not dead, but sleepeth. And they laughed him to scorn. But when he had put them all out, he taketh the father and the mother of the damsel, and them that were with him, and entered in where the damsel was lying. And he took the damsel by the hand, and said unto her, Tahalathakamai, which is being interpreted, Damsel, I say unto thee, arise. Actually, he said, Little lamb, I say unto thee, arise. And straightway the damsel arose and walked, for she was of the age of 12 years. And they were astonished with great astonishment, and he charged them straightly that no man should know it, and commanded that they give her something to eat. The woman who interrupted him on his way to heal this little girl, according to tradition, Veronica went and pleaded before Herod of Jesus' innocency. And according to tradition, Veronica also met Jesus as he was on his way to be crucified and wiped the sweat off of his brow. That's what tradition says. The Bible has not chosen to tell us this woman's name, nor that she appeared to Herod and defended Jesus, nor that she wiped his brow. It chooses instead to leave her nameless. And just says that this certain woman stopped Jesus on his way down to the raising of this little girl and stole a cure by touching the hem of his garment. I want you to notice something, that the little girl was 12 years old. And I'd have you notice further that Veronica, I'll call her that during the sermon to make it easy, that Veronica had this sickness for 12 years. They were neighbors. At least they lived in the same town. I don't know but what they had seen each other from time to time. And in the last 12 years, their lives were completely different. 12 years earlier, there had been the happy sound of a baby's cry and the laughter filling Jairus' house of a young daughter. And there was great joy in that home because a healthy baby girl had been born. But perhaps the same day, perhaps the same month, perhaps the same day, Veronica was struck with a disease of bleeding. And she bled, and she bled, and had an issue of blood for 12 years. An incurable disease, and one that has great pain. He listened daily to the laughter of a little child in his home, but she sat alone in pain and gloom and despair and disappointment. He was healthy and she was sick, nauseated and bleeding. He was wealthy, but the Bible says that she had spent all of her living trying to find a cure for this terrible disease. He had a social life with friends, but because she had an issue of blood, she was ostracized from society, divorced by her own husband, necessarily so because the law of Moses insisted that no man could approach a woman with an issue of blood. Divorced, alone, pain, bleeding, shame, suspicion, because everyone figured that it was a social disease. Ostracized from society. And for 12 years, he went down to the synagogue and was ruler of the synagogue. Enjoyed his religious life. But for 12 years, this woman was ostracized from society, was forbidden to go to the synagogue, could not go to the temple, to the court of women when she went to Jerusalem. It did her no good to even go to the feasts of the Jews. But trouble has a way of finally coming to everybody's house. Some endure trouble for 12 years, and some have 12 years of happiness. But eventually, trouble has a way of coming to everybody's house. And trouble finally came to this house of Jairus. Every trouble is a summons to appear in the presence of Jesus. That's why we have trouble, you know. God allows trouble to come into our life, puts us flat on our back so that we look up. And every trouble is a summons to come into the presence of Christ. And though he had it nice for 12 years, and she had it terrible for 12 years, now both of them are finally appearing in court, so to speak, before the Lord of the universe the same day. He openly begs Jesus to come. He's a ruler and he humbles himself, falls down at his feet and begs him to come home and heal his daughter. He says, "My little daughter lieth at the point of death. I pray thee, come and lay thy hands on her that she may be healed and she shall live." Oh, he was willing to prostrate himself at Jesus' feet for his daughter. And Jesus immediately arose and started on his journey to heal this little girl. But Veronica meets him on the way. She reaches to touch him and stops the procession. And I cannot help but wonder the anxiety and the frustration and perhaps even the anger of Jairus when he said, "Oh, there's that woman, I see her all the time, hanging out on the end of the crowd. What is she doing here? She has an issue of blood. She has no business here." But not one word of complaint is recorded. Jairus did not make one complaint, but in fact he stood still, and Jesus took the time to heal this woman. And then her very healing became the basis that when he was told that his child was dead, his heart must have sunk. Oh, if she hadn't interrupted us, we would have got there in time. He could have saved her. But in fact, her very healing became the basis of Jesus being able to look at him when he said, "Your daughter's already dead." That Jesus could look at him and say, "Don't fear, only believe." And I'm confident that her healing became the basis of keeping up his faith that Jesus could still do something for him. But I don't have time to look at Jairus completely. I want to look at this woman, Veronica. I want you to look, first of all, at her need. As I said, she's sick. Did you notice that the whole world isn't worth anything when you're sick? Sickness has a tendency to take the flavor out of your food. Sickness takes the flavor out of life itself. Sickness takes the joy out of family get-togethers. Sickness takes the joy out of making a buck. Sickness removes joy. This woman had a great need. In fact, 12 years she is diseased in body. She's disappointed by doctors. Look how it says that. Sounds like doctors. She suffered many things of many doctors. Man, if you think you suffer many things of many doctors today when you're sick, and you know sometimes the cure is worse than the sickness. Do you ever notice that? She suffered many things of many doctors. Man, if you think it's bad today, you ought to have been back then. Some of the things that they had the people to do, you absolutely wouldn't believe, and I wouldn't repeat in a mixed audience what they often did and had people do for people with sicknesses. She suffered many things of many doctors. I noticed that this story is recorded in three of the Gospels, and Luke, the great physician that wrote the book of Luke, you'll notice that Luke doesn't mention that she suffered many things of many physicians. He wouldn't betray his trade. She's diseased in body, disappointed by doctors, distressed by poverty. She spent all that she had. The other gospel said she spent her whole living. And she's dispossessed of the synagogue, divorced by her husband, and ostracized by her friends and separated from society. I mean, she had wasted her time, she had wasted her energy, and she had wasted her money trying to get well. And it says that she did not grow better, but worse, and none could heal her. Friend, that's a picture of you and I. That woman's need is the same. Hers was a physical sickness where her life blood was ebbing out of her body, but ours is the need of salvation. And we have lost our spiritual life, and we are sin sick, like she was sick of this issue of blood. And we have suffered many things of many doctors. We've tried many things. We've been to doctor legalism. And we try to cross every T and dot every I and obey every law. And we think, I'll be saved by law keeping. But we can't. Doctor legalism doesn't cure us. We can't live up to his prescriptions. We can't do his exercises. Doctor resolution. I've tried it. How many of you made a resolution at the first of the year and are still keeping it? Doctor resolution. Doctor abstinence. I'll totally abstain. Doctor abstinence doesn't heal us. So we go to doctor psychology, and we think that doctor psychology is going to heal us, and we suffer many things of many doctors. We try doctor ceremony, and we try to live by certain ceremonies and think they're going to help us with our sin problem, but it doesn't. So we try doctor education, and we think education has got the answers to our woe. But that certainly falls short. And some even go to doctor occultism and end up following the occult practices. And occultism doesn't have. I mean, people try to get rid of the lotus sin and their sin problem, and they suffer many things of many doctors, and they do not grow better, but worse. And none of them could heal them. What a picture of our own selves when we see this woman's great need. But not only look at her need, look at her faith. My, what risk she took in a crowd of people that she wasn't supposed to be there. She was unclean. She was supposed to stay away from the crowd. No one was to touch a woman with an issue of blood. She wasn't supposed to be in that crowd. She wasn't only not supposed to be there, she wasn't wanted there. And for her to risk the rebuke and the mocking that they would have said if they would have known that she was a woman with an issue of blood. I mean, her faith had a great risk to it. Her faith had great humility to it. Notice it says that she came behind him. Not like Jairus. Jairus is a religious ruler. He's a great man. He's got many friends. He's wealthy. He can fall right at the feet of Jesus. He humbled himself too. But this woman is so humble that She follows behind him and says, if I can but touch the hem of his garment. Her faith was risky. Her faith was humble. Her faith was imperfect. But even though it was imperfect, it was genuine as it could be. It was imperfect because she understood his power, but didn't understand his goodness. She says, he can do something for me. She knew his power. She had heard of Jesus, and she knew his power, but she didn't understand his goodness, that he would want to heal her. You know, there are many people that believe in the power of God. They believe that God can do something, but they don't believe that God will do something. Faith is not believing he can. Faith is believing he will. This woman has a great faith. Look at her faith. She didn't say, if I can but touch the hem of his garment, I will be relieved. If I can but touch the hem of his garment, I'll feel better. She says, if I can but touch the hem of his garment, I will be whole. I'm not going to get better. I'm going to be whole. I mean, this woman has got a tremendous faith. She knows his power. She just misunderstands his goodness and believes that she's going to be whole. Look what she said. If I can but touch. If I can but touch the hem of his garment. Veronica, according to tradition, was not a Jew, but was maybe a Gentile. Whether she was a Jew or Gentile, the Bible doesn't tell me, and I don't care. But she wanted to touch the hem of his garment. You remember Jesus mocked the Pharisees, rebuked the Pharisees because they increased the borders of their garments. Remember what that means? If you remember, the Jews were supposed to wear a border at the bottom of their garment. It was blue. And that blue border on the end of their garment said, I am one of the elect children of God. I am a Jew. I'm one of God's chosen. She wanted to touch the hem of Jesus' blue garment. She wanted to be recognized. Whether she was a Jew or Gentile, I don't know. But she wanted to touch that border of his garment. And the Pharisees would increase the border of their garment, make it really big, make it say, I am one of the elite of God. And instead of humbly doing that, they increased the borders of their garments and bragged that they and they alone were the children of God. And this woman says, if I can just touch the border of that garment, if I can just get some of the value of the fact that he is the Son of God. I'll tell you, the woman had strong faith. And that faith comes by hearing of Jesus. Look what it says. When she had heard of Jesus, she said, if I can but touch the hem of his garment, I will be made whole. Great faith. Because faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. I'll tell you, friends, Jesus responds to faith like that. It may have a misunderstanding of his goodness. They may only recognize his power. But when you've got that kind of faith, and it's an intentional touch, an intentional reaching out, he responds to faith like that. It may be only a spark of fire, but it is a fire. And he fans that kind of faith and tries to increase that kind of faith to something great. He blows on it. No faith is so feeble that he will not respond to it if it's intentional. You can't get the advantage of Jesus by rubbing against Jesus. The press was so great that when he said, who touched me? The disciples said, man, everybody's touching you. Everybody's thronging against you. What do you mean, who touched you? But you don't get the healing power and the virtue of Jesus by accidentally rubbing shoulders with him and touching his clothes. It must be an intentional, deliberate act of faith. And when you reach out in faith, believing that you will be made whole, you will be made whole. But it's not a dead faith. It's not an intellectual faith. It's a believing, active faith that reaches out. Here was a persistent faith. Active, fear, elbowing her way through the crowd to get at him. There's a great press there, thronging him. He's there, and she wants to see him, and she elbows and aggressively proceeds to go to him. It was inconvenient to get to him. And that kind of faith that's active and elbowing and aggressive and is inconvenient but done, that kind of faith is rewarded. And God does something when there is the intentional act of faith to touch Jesus. God's wind is always blowing, but you must turn your sail toward his breeze. Hudson Taylor was once on a ship, and it looked like that they were going to be blown into some islands where there were some cannibals, and the captain of the ship came to Hudson Taylor, the great missionary, and said, "Hudson, please pray that God will send a breeze so that we can avoid this cannibal-infested island." And he said, "I won't pray unless you turn your sails toward what breeze there already is." And the man says, "I don't dare." He said, "Unless you turn the sail toward the breeze that is already there, I won't pray." And so he said, "Pray, I'll turn them." And he did. And the breeze started. In fact, they came up to him and said, "You can stop praying. We got too much breeze." Someone has said, George Meredith said, "The wind that fills my sails propels, but I'm the helmsman." It must be a deliberate act of faith, a reaching out in faith, and God will always respond to a faith, no matter how small the spark. He'll fan it to a greater faith. And then thirdly, look at the cure. It was immediate. In that same hour, straightway, Luke puts it, that means immediate. It was immediate. And it was known of her. She felt it through her whole body. And it was complete. She was whole. She didn't feel better. She wasn't relieved. The pain didn't just subside. She was whole. I like that word. No more misery. No more labor. No more expense. No more shame. No more ostracizing. Complete, whole. Immediately. And that's what Christ does to us. When we are obedient to his gospel, when we in faith act upon our faith with an active faith and belief in him, I tell you, when we obey the gospel, it is immediate, it is complete, and it is a time that we know that we have salvation. You can know you're saved. You know that? John says, "I've written these things unto you that believe in the name of the Son of God, that you may know that you have eternal life." He says, "I wrote you this book so you can know that you have eternal life." You know it. And then not only her cure, but lastly, I want you to look at the healer. He's aware of it. Jesus, knowing that virtue had gone out of it, Augustine said, "Flesh presses, faith touches." Other people were pressing against it. The flesh presses you, but faith reaches out intentionally and touches. And Jesus knew. He said, "Who touched my clothes? Who touched me? Lord, everybody's touched you. What do you mean, who touched you?" But he knew that virtue had gone out of it. I want you to imagine an ocean. See the ocean? I want you to imagine a cup. Reaching into the ocean and taking out of the ocean a cup of water. Who'd miss it? Who'd know it was gone? A cup of water out of an ocean? And out of the mercy of God, out of the ocean of the mercy of God, virtue went out of him, just a cup full. But he said, "Who touched me?" I mean, you steal a cup of mercy from the Lord, you have to give an account of it. And he wanted this woman to come forward and to give an account of what had happened. Now the commentaries make a big to-do over the look that Jesus gave the woman. They have fire leaping out of his eyes. They have him angry. Who touched me? And the woman did come in fear and trembling. She shouldn't have been there. She had an issue of blood. She had no business there. She's breaking the law to be there. I don't think it was a look of anger. I think he said, who touched me? I think it was a look of welcome, a look of love, a look of pity. I think there was a smile on his face. Who touched me? He was aware of what he did. He knew that there was a cup of water taken out of his ocean. And he wasn't on the count of it. He insists that we acknowledge what he does for us. Were there not 10 lepers? But where are the other 9? He wants an acknowledgement of what you did, what he did for you, mister. He wants an acknowledgement of what he did for you, sister. He isn't going to let you steal a cure. If he blesses you, if he helps you, you're going to have to acknowledge it publicly. He wants a public profession, and he wants you to confess the truth. She told him all the truth. He wants you to confess your disease. He wants you to confess your suffering. He wants you to confess all the futile attempts that you yourself has made to get rid of those problems. He wants you to confess your fears. He wants a confession, and he wants a profession. He wants you to tell people what he did for you. He wants you to know that he didn't accidentally heal you. He wants it known that there is no such thing as an unpurposed healing. She reached for the hem of his garment, and he let virtue go out because he felt the need. You're not accidentally blessed by God, friend. You're not accidentally blessed by Jesus Christ. He purposely blesses you, and he wants an acknowledgement of it. He wants you to do something about it and tell people about it. He purposely meets your need. Now, Jesus didn't come to heal bodies. Jesus came to affect souls. And he didn't come into life to go by and allow some woman to grab a healing. He came to the world and did miracles to prove that he was the Christ that came into the world to save sinners. And he's not content for a man to snatch an advantage, a physical advantage from him. He wants to do more than that. And that's what he does. He wants to give this woman a further blessing. He wants to give her a complete blessing. He wants to purify her faith. He wants to strengthen her faith. He wants to correct her faith. Right now, she only knows that he is powerful. He wants her to know he's more than powerful. He wants her to know he's good. That he's not only able, but that he's willing. That he can do more abundantly than what you either ask or think. That's what he wants. God doesn't want you to just know his power. He wants you to know he loves you, that he's good, and he rebukes with you in mind. Who touched me? Come forward. And though we have to come forward sometimes and tell the whole truth, Lord, I'm sin sick. Lord, I'm suffering. Lord, I have tried over and over and over to get rid of it by abstinence. I've tried to get rid of this by resolution. I've tried legalism. I've tried occultism. I've tried this and that. He wants us to tell him that. He wants us to say, Lord, there isn't anybody that can heal besides you. I've spent my time, my energy, and my money trying to find the problem, answer to my problem, but I can't. Jesus expects you to testify of what he did for you. Jesus wants a public profession of your faith and what he did for you. Salvation is not a luxury for you to enjoy in private. You hear that? I said salvation is not a luxury for you to enjoy in private. There is no such thing as a private disciple. There's no such thing as a secret disciple. If Jesus did something for you, he expects you to say, here's what I was, here's what I've suffered, here's what he's done for me. He expects you to come forward and tell the truth. And then you'll have a complete blessing. Not something that's stolen, but something that's real. He wanted her to publicly testify what she did. A plant left in the darkness does not bear sweet fruit. Hear that? A plant in the darkness will not bear sweet fruit. If he planted you, he wants you out in the sun, in the open, testify. That's the only way a plant will bring forth sweet fruit, is for it to be in the open where it can produce sweet fruit. He not only wants you to receive a further blessing, he not only wants you to testify of him and make a public profession, but he doesn't want you to go away doubting. Suppose he wouldn't have said anything. Suppose he wouldn't have ever brought her to an account. Suppose he had let her stool the cure and gone on back home and the issue of blood had stopped. She would have gone away doubting his willingness to heal. She would have gone away doubting his forgiveness for stealing that cure. She would have gone away doubting that the cure would be permanent. She would have always wondered, I wonder what he would do if he ever found out that I did it. I wonder if tomorrow when I wake up, I'll still be whole. Is this permanent? Would he have willingly done it? God doesn't want you to go away in doubt. He wants you to know that he wants to heal you, that he's willing to do more. He blesses this woman with a complete blessing. You don't need to steal a cure. He's willing to do it, and do it permanently. He wants you to know that you have eternal life. He wants you to know something else. He wants you to know that you're his child. Who touched me? She came forward and told him all the truth. And what did he say to her? Daughter. She's the only woman Jesus ever called daughter. Daughter. It's not his daughter, I'm his child. Daughter. Do you realize what a daughter means to a man? Didn't you see what Jairus would do? Ruler. Wealthy ruler of the synagogue. Daughter sick. Why, a man, even though he's wealthy, even though he's a ruler, will prostrate himself before the feet of Jesus and beg for the life of his daughter. He'll do anything for a daughter. Daughter, be of good comfort. Be of good comfort, he says to her. And listen to what he says. In Greek he says, and go into peace. He didn't say go in peace. He said, go into peace. She hadn't had peace for 12 years. 12 years ostracized from society, divorced from her husband, away from the church, away from the temple, away from the synagogue, away from her friends, shunned, garments pulled close to them as people walked by. He said, daughter, I want you to know you're my daughter. Be of good comfort. Go into peace. When Jesus corrects you, friends, he corrects you to make you know that he's willing to heal you, willing to make you realize you're his child, that you are permanently, completely whole with his blessing. Let me conclude with these thoughts. When Cortez went to conquer Mexico, his soldiers wanted to return to Spain. There were so many Mexicans that he was afraid, or they were afraid, and they said, let's go back to Spain. We cannot conquer all of these Mexicans. So Cortez, with two of his other men, or three of his other men, went down to the sea and destroyed their own ships. And he let the men then see those destroyed ships. And after they had seen the destroyed ships, he said, now we cannot go back. We must conquer or die. Now these Spaniards were in a life and death situation. This woman was in a life and death situation. And you're in a heaven or hell situation. You're either in a pardon or a judgment situation, and you ought to be like Veronica and those Spaniards. I'm going to do this or die. And you ought to do what Veronica did and exercise your faith, no matter what your shame is, no matter how little and imperfect your faith is, no matter what past discouragements and failures you've had in the past. You ought to say, if I can but touch the hem of his garment, I'll be made whole. The commentaries aggravate me. They try to make Veronica suspicious, or superstitious, rather. Try to make her superstitious in thinking the clothes would heal her. Oh, she didn't think the clothes would heal her. It was who he was. She recognized that the power was within him, and if she could but touch him, she'd be healed. Friend, that's true. If you could but touch the hem of Jesus' garments, I want you to know there's healing. There's three people in Matthew 5 that are healed. There's that demon-possessed man that cut himself and abused himself and even abused people that dwell in the tombs, you remember, and had the so many demons in him, he was called Legion, and Jesus cast them out. He was ostracized too by society. He was obnoxious to society. And so sinful, the people didn't like him and tried to put chains on him. I mean, he was absolutely obnoxious to society, but Jesus healed him. And then there's this woman here who has the issue of blood. She's a type of those people who are unsuccessfully striving to cure themselves by listening to what men says. And they couldn't heal her, but Jesus could heal a person like that. And then there's Jairus' daughter, this little dead girl who was dead in sin. And society laughed that Jesus could raise her up and give her life, but he could. Those are the three kind of people that there are in the world. The three kind of people are those people who are so bad sinners, they're not obnoxious even to society. Jesus can cure them. There are people who are going around trying to heal themselves and trying everything to be better people. And no one can help them, but Jesus can. And there's those that are so dead in sin, society says you can't possibly bring them back to a good life, but Jesus can. Because Jesus is the Son of God. And if we, with an intentional, deliberate, active faith, reach out and touch the hem of his garment, there's healing. And I don't want to leave this without telling you as a church that there are Veronicas out there in that world that you're rubbing shoulders with every day. There are Veronicas out there that have tried everything. Some are looking for the answer in the end of a bottle. Some are looking for it in a needle. Some are looking for it at a college campus in education. Others are spending their time at a psychiatrist's office or a counselor's office. They're looking for answers. But somebody told Veronica of Jesus. And when she heard of Jesus, she came and said within herself, if I could but touch the hem of his garment, I'd be made whole. So I say to you that are Christians today, there is the need for you to find those Veronicas and tell them about Jesus, so that they'll want to touch the hem of his garment. But if I'm talking to someone today who's not a Christian, and you've tried everything, you have suffered many things of many doctors, and you still don't have that peace, that comfort,
God's still not called you his daughter. You his daughter or his son, his child. I want you to know, you don't have to touch the hem of his garment. You can be like Jairus. You can fall at his feet and ask him to come to your house. Make everything right at home. He will. He begs you to. He's not only powerful. He's willing. As we sing our song of invitation this morning, we invite you to obey the gospel.